Hi, everyone, and welcome back to No Time for Neutral. I'm your host, Georgia Hawthorne.
And I'm Andy.
And if you're watching us on YouTube, our setup looks a little bit different. We had a little bit of a hiatus. I have been moving from Missoula back to my hometown, Great Falls, over the last couple of weeks. So I'm very sorry that we didn't have an episode the last 2 weeks. But you'll get to see me decorate this space, because I swear to God, I'm going to have decorations eventually. But Andy, we have had so much happen in the last couple of weeks. But I want to start with the positives. This past weekend was No Kings Day, No Kings 2.0, and that rally had I believe the estimates are between 7 and 8 million, that came out across the country this past weekend. And based on what I can tell from news outlets and articles and such, and this doesn't include many of the smaller rural areas that had events this past weekend, I'd say over 30,000 Montanans showed up this past weekend.
Amazing. I attended the one here in Missoula, of course, where I live. It was awesome. We met at the courthouse and they shut down the street. So we walked down Broadway, turned on to Higgins, ended up on, I believe, Alder. There was a stage set up. Nancy Keenan, the former executive director of the Montana Democratic Party and director of NARAL, emceed. She was amazing. There was a ton of great speakers ranging from like teachers to an immigration lawyer.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And we had somewhere between like 8 and 10,000 people in Missouri.
Wow.
The current reported 10,000. That may be a little steep, but yeah, there was definitely more at this No Kings rally than there was in the springtime.
That's awesome. And I mean, the whole narrative around all of these protests since they really started it was that like everyone is bought and paid for. They were bussed in by some like Haiti outside group, and it's only in the big cities and so on and so forth. I was there. I wasn't paid.
Yeah.
I haven't been paid yet, actually. Well, that's part of the deal. I'm getting gypped.
Part of their rhetoric that they're trying to push. And I noticed that the last protest too, this whole like paid protester thing, like the couple like Facebook and Instagram posts I've been putting out, these like yahoos from God knows where are like paid protester. Yeah.
I don't know when that's really ever been a thing. As far as I can remember, the only person I can think of that pays people to go to their events would be Donald Trump. Do you remember all of those Craigslist ads that were like, we need people to come to this rally? Like,
right. Right.
Yeah. So interesting. But yeah, there were 31 events in Montana. There are 7 big towns. 31, including Polebridge.
Polebridge, yeah.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
Polebridge, for those of you who haven't made it out the North Fork of Glacier yet, one, next summer you absolutely should. It's gorgeous. And two, there's a tiny little town called Polebridge, and they have a little mercantile, and they have the best bear claws you have ever had in your whole life. And most of them are huckleberry, although they have other flavors if you're not a huckleberry person.
I also want to know, because I think this is really important, the vast majority of the protests this weekend were peaceful. And I know Donald Trump and the Republicans are trying to paint this on Fox News and their far right channels as like some crazy left-wing liberal violent riotous mess of hateful Americans that hate this country. They kept using this hate American rally rhetoric before the rallies, and that's not at all what it was. It was local people coming together in their communities to protest against this administration and its authoritarianism.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, there were people, because like it's October, it's Halloween, there was people like running around in blow up unicorn costumes and like, silly outfits, which is like the least threatening one could be, right? So I just think it's really important that people understand these massive protests were peaceful.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I think my favorite costume that I saw, I went to the protest here in Great Falls, and there was someone in a, for my Star Wars folks out there, there was someone in a blow-up Grogu costume.
Amazing.
And which is like Baby Yoda, and they were holding a sign that was like, no dictators, no tyrants, this is the way, which is like a Mandalorian pun. But yeah, I thought it was a great weekend of community and resilience. These protests just keep getting bigger and bigger every time there is one nationwide like this.
Totally.
And we'll see if the administration takes any cues, I guess.
Yeah. And frankly, there's nothing more patriotic than criticizing your government, because that means you love your country enough to criticize it in order to make it better.
Also, I'm pretty sure No Kings is like the most American thing ever.
Right. We were founded on living in a country with no king. You're right.
Maybe you guys should take another history class. So Pete Hegseth, who is our Secretary of Defense, Secretary of War, whatever they're calling themselves these days.
Right.
He has been in a major beef with the entire journalism industry, essentially.
Just funny, because he came from the journalism industry.
Yeah, this guy was a Fox News host.
Yeah.
So, like, journalists, take it with a grain of salt. But so Pete Hegseth essentially decides that he's going to force the Pentagon Press Corps to sign an agreement that says they wouldn't solicit information from military officials or publish information without pre-authorization, essentially, without approval. That is being a journalist.
Right.
Is soliciting and publishing information.
Your job is
information that powerful people don't want.
Right.
Like, out in the universe. But so every single news outlet that had a reporter at the Pentagon, with the exception of One America News, which sounds really reliable to me. Every news outlet except them basically told Hegseth to go straight to hell. They said, do not ask, go, do not collect $200. Like, we're not doing this. We're not playing your games. So all of these news outlets publish a statement that basically says, hey, we're a little bit concerned about, the freedom of the press. Getting accurate, reliable information to the American people. We're a little worried about this, and we're going to continue to do our jobs, even if you're not going to let us in the building. All of the news outlets who walked out signed on to this letter. Do you know how badly you have to screw up to get Newsmax, which is more conservative than Fox News, and MSNBC, which the right thinks is like woke nonsense.
Right.
They are on one letter to the Secretary of Defense saying, hey, this is bad. You shouldn't have done it.
Love to see it. I wish we could see more of that.
No, the unity is awesome.
It's great.
But unfortunately, Pete Hegseth is now done when it comes to stymieing the flow of information in America, especially when it pertains to the military. Because he has also prohibited Pentagon staff and military officials from talking to Congress or anyone on Capitol Hill. Staffers, elected officials, you don't talk to Capitol Hill unless Pete Hegseth gives you approval.
How does he do that?
I don't really know. Which is how it's all about
protecting the people that work in the Pentagon from having communication with elected officials in Congress.
Right. What it feels like to me is that he is desperate to control the narrative. And so he can't have any loose ends. He can't have those pesky reporters looking into things where they shouldn't be looking into things. and they can't have a staffer who is like trying to raise concerns to someone on Capitol Hill, like to like escalate. All of those are the kinds of things that are going to get tamped down with these actions. And it's also very, very concerning to have the U.S. military essentially completely sectioned off from both the public and the legislative branch in Congress, which essentially just their only anchoring point when it comes to like U.S. democratic institutions right now is the executive branch. And that is extremely concerning.
Yeah, that's dangerous. Well, you know, in moments like this, when Fox News and MSNBC come together and sign the same documents that call out the administration, maybe this signals a bit of a shift or turning point that's been gradually coming. I'd love to see more things like this.
Same. I would love a Republican senator to like embody some of this vibe and maybe, you know, negotiate on healthcare subsidies so we can reopen the government.
Like the whole Jimmy Kimmel scandal, for example, yeah. Ted Cruz, of all people, and Rand Paul, he both voiced their opposition to silencing free speech. So, yeah, kudos to those Republicans that are speaking out when shit like this comes around, because what the Trump administration is doing here is some pretty dangerous shit. So kudos for those that do speak out.
Yeah, same here. But unfortunately, Trump is still doing more dangerous shit. Surprise to no one.
Tell me more.
His latest is that he is suing the Department of Justice.
Because why?
For legal damages from his past investigations. Oh. He is suing his own Department of Justice for past actions. For $230 million.
Oh, poor baby.
$230 million. And if the DOJ gets sued and has to pay out a settlement, the DOJ money is not DOJ money. It's taxpayer money.
Right. So if you were to win this stupid lawsuit, he would be receiving taxpayer funds for personal gain.
Yes.
What a grifter, Georgie. What a grifter. It's because he feels wronged for past lawsuits, so he's suing the Department of Justice.
Yep. He feels as if he was like incorrectly prosecuted by the DOJ during President Biden's tenure. And so he is now suing them, which is really convenient because he got to appoint and handpick essentially everyone who works in that department. So if everyone he's hiring is a loyalist and they will do whatever Donald Trump says, and he says, hey, guys, I'm going to sue you. Okay. Okay.
Wink, wink.
Yeah, like, what do we think is going to happen? This is quite, like, $230 million.
It's a lot of money.
You could almost give every person in America a dollar with that.
That's true.
But he, his lifestyle taste is so insane to me. The Oval Office is just gaudy gold.
Yeah. Gold everywhere.
It's so gross. It looks so tacky. And now he's spending another. We're just going to run up a tab for him here really quick. So we've got $230 million that he's suing the DOJ for. He's spending $250 million for his stupid ballroom, which they are literally demolishing the East Wing of the White House for.
It's so sad. Ugh, makes my heart hurt.
The same. I like didn't think I cared about the White House as like a building all that much. Like I don't know, I never think about it like that. But seeing the photos of like them taking a wrecker to it, I was like, what?
Yeah. Because, like, to me, you know, the White House has its history, right? Like, it was originally built by slaves, which is, of course, awful, horrific. But, you know, it's been the home of our presidents for years and years and, you know, got the title of the People's House, right? It is the People's House. It is the Americans' home that, you know, the president and their family happens to live in. And just those images of them, like, tearing down the People's House. Yeah, it's not a good feeling. And then that he's going to replace it with this just, like, god-awful $250 million eyesore that's going to just, like, overshadow the rest of the architecture of the White, like.
And it would, like, maybe be different if he was going to have, like, a like, tasteful party in said ballroom. Like, if he invited, like, state lawmakers, like, from every state, regardless of affiliation, like, let's all come have a dinner together in this ballroom as Americans. Okay, sure. Like, we still don't need to, like, do all of this for it. But, like, I guess he's going to do nothing but host fancy donor dinners,
right,
in that ballroom that are probably pay to enter. You have to pay his LLC or his foundation or his campaign or whatever it is to get in the door. That ballroom isn't for you. It's not for me.
Yeah, it's for the Trump organization. Trump family. Trump.
It's really their friends. Yeah, we've got the Rose Garden Club that is now paved over. Like, that one was bad. This one is worse.
Yeah.
For sure.
For sure.
It's also a little concerning because, like, you don't make home renovations if you're planning on leaving.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right. That's
like, if he knew that someone else was going to, like, come in here in 4 years, because that's how it works, according to the Constitution, I feel like he wouldn't be doing all of this. Like, he didn't do any of this in his first term.
That's true. He's also, like, always concerned about his legacy, though. And what better legacy than, like,
that's a good point.
Grecian architectural blobs of concrete. Yeah.
Oh, but that's not all. We've got more. After he got gifted his $400,000 Qatari jet or whatever it was from the royal family, he's now spent $172 million on two private jets for DHS Secretary Kristi Noem, aka the woman who's conducting all of these ICE raids across the country. And, you know, she's got to be places for her photo ops.
Right, right. What's her nickname? Ice Barbie?
Something like that.
Okay, so why her? Why does she get the planes?
I'd imagine that she's getting the planes because she is probably doing the most traveling out of the secretaries, if I'd had to imagine. Well, you've got, you know, the National Guard in D.C. and the National Guard in Chicago and the National Guard in L.A. and you're trying to send the National Guard to Portland. Like, those are all very far apart. And she loves nothing more than to drop in the middle of an ICE raid where families are literally being terrorized and just
getting
this is your taxpayer money at work. Look at us go. We're protecting America. That's all she does is photo op. But yeah, so we've got that. And this is the biggest one. A combined $40 billion bailout for Argentina.
Yeah, let's talk about that one. That's crazy.
Yeah, we'll get to that one here in a minute. But, like, if we start from where we started, we've got $230 million in taxpayer money that he's essentially stealing. He's spending $250 million on a ballroom. He's already spent $172 million on these private jets for Kristi Noem. And $40 billion to his authoritarian friend in Argentina. These are all recent. Like, within the last, like, 6 weeks, 2 months recent. For the party who says they care about the deficit and fiscal responsibility, what the hell is going on? And these are the same guys who are telling us that there's no money to extend ACL cities.
Yeah. It doesn't add up. The math doesn't work.
It doesn't. But when it comes to Argentina, if you've been lucky enough to miss these headlines, MAGA doesn't stand for Make America Great Again. It actually stands for Make Argentina Great Again. And I'm assuming this based off of the president's actions, because I haven't really seen anything contrary. So a couple of weeks ago, he started debating whether or not he was going to give a $20 billion bailout to Argentina to boost their economy. Argentina's ruler is very similar to Trump, was democratically elected, but like the warning signs are all over the place. Their flags are the color of my sweatshirt. Like, everything looks bad. But it's not to the point where, like, the world is like, oh, he's a dictator, if you understand where I'm coming from. So Trump is using this $20 billion to keep one of his political allies afloat and in the game, because he can't be alone. He can't be the only one acting like this. Or eventually everyone's going to catch on. So the global complexity of this is also huge.
So he's trying to, like, keep a buddy in the Southern Hemisphere who's also, like, authoritarian and has, like, dictator-like tendencies to make it look normal and keep, like, this weird momentum shift of right-wing politics vibe.
That is what I've seen. That's what feels closest to me. Because of, like, we've seen a rightward shift across the globe in recent years. It's not just the US.
Yeah.
And so this is them kind of allying together, essentially, to hold on to their power.
By sending our taxpayer money to a foreign country.
Yep.
To bail them out for a mess that they created on their own.
Yep. So, yeah, this $20 billion bailout, the first one, gets approved. And what does Argentina do? Argentina turns around and sells a whole bunch of soybeans to China. I'm going to try to explain this as easily as I can. So China is one of the biggest importers of American soybeans, meaning that China buys a lot of the soybeans that are grown here in the U.S. But in recent weeks, recent months, more like, China's completely turned away from the U.S. market because of Trump's tariffs. And so Montana farmers are already hurting big time because the soybean market is crashing. So that's where we stand after bailout number one. Bailout number two, we are considering another $20 billion bailout to Argentina. I believe this one is designated for the private sector to boost business and boost the economy and so what. And just sounds like a bunch of money is going to get slid into sympathetic rich businessmen's pockets to me personally, but I would love to be proven wrong. So we're considering that. But so he gets on microphone and he talks about how the U.S. is going to start importing Argentinian beef in order to bring beef prices down in the U.S. And so if you're a rancher in Montana, or you know someone who's a rancher, the beef market right now has been better than it has been in a really long time. This a really long time being the last couple of years. And this is the best it's been in a while. Trump got on TV today trying to take credit for this, that he's the reason why the beef market is good, which is not true. But so the way this works is the president is actively calling to import goods into the United States, goods that we produce here. If you remember, that was the whole point of the tariffs, was to have things produced in America, made in America. He wants to import Argentinian beef to continue helping out his friends, and it will bring the domestic beef market down. our ranchers, Montana ranchers, will make less money in the beef market than they do right now because he wants to help one of his friends.
Maybe this will be the straw that breaks the camel's back. I wouldn't want to be pissing off all these Montana ranchers, you know?
Me either. I don't think I've ever met a Montana rancher. But, like, the absolute, like, I don't know if it's ignorance or intentionality or what it is at this point, but it is so brazen and so disrespectful that, like, I don't know how everyone isn't angry yet.
Yeah.
Especially for, like, a group that overwhelmingly voted for Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think for some people, you know, they don't pay super close attention like we do to the day-to-day news. So they may not even know this yet, let alone believe it when they hear it the first time. So it might actually take these activities to happen in order for people to understand what's actually going on.
Right. I think it's going to be a hard winter for sure. I think folks are going to struggle to put food on the table. I think folks are going to struggle to make it from paycheck to paycheck. I think it's going to be a hard winter.
I agree with you. I mean, this government shutdown alone, which let's be honest, is a Republican shutdown because Republican power in the executive branch and the Senate and the House, because of this shutdown come November 1st, people will be losing their SNAP benefits.
Yeah. Like, these guys refuse to come to the table and negotiate to reopen the government because they don't want to give you health care. Because they don't want you to be able to afford to go to the doctor. Because they don't want you to use SNAP. Because they don't want you to have food on the table. Because they literally don't care.
I said, but they do care about bailing out foreign countries like in Argentina. Yeah. or building a stupid ass ballroom on the side of the White House so Trump can have bougie parties.
Like, these are the things that are important. I would like it to be known for everybody that Zinke and Downing have been on literal vacation for most of the shutdown. If anyone got to watch the video of Zinke cleaning toilets in Yellowstone, I hope you giggled because I did. That's the most honest work that man has ever done in his life. And I did think it was funny that he did it in Yellowstone, because apparently no one told him there's a national park in his district. He could have done that in Glacier and actually benefited his own constituents. But no, he went to clear other side and see.
You're right.
But yeah, so these guys are out doing whatever they're doing. They have not refused their paycheck. Some members of Congress have. They have written the payroll office or whoever it is on Capitol Hill and said, hey, if my constituents like can't get paid, I'm not going to get paid. Please withhold my paycheck.
Right. If more elected officials in Congress did just that, refused their paycheck, I would respect them a little bit more. Even, you know, like if they refused their paycheck and were like, I'm not getting paid because I'm part of the problem in preventing workers, American government workers, from getting paid. So therefore, I'm going to refuse my paycheck while this government shutdown is happening. If more people did that, I would respect them a little bit more.
Yeah. That's what, like, a real leader would do. You don't have very many of those these days, unfortunately. Definitely not in Montana's delegation, that's for sure. But yeah, they said nothing about returning their own paycheck or pausing their paycheck. Zinke made a nice show of donating $2,500 to a food bank up in the Flathead Valley, which is great. You should be doing that. But you know what else you could do? reopen the government and give people healthcare and food. They don't need your charity money. They need you to do your job. Speaking of the House being an absolute mess, Adelita Grijalva has still not been sworn in.
Can you give some background on her?
Yeah, totally. She won her election in the Arizona 7 special election. It was actually her father's seat, and he had passed away while in Congress. She won the special. It is now her seat. And that was a month ago. The special election was conducted a month ago, and she has still not been sworn in. 812,000 Arizonans have not had a voice in Congress this entire time. Like, during the shutdown, 812,000 people do not have a representative in Congress for them.
Right.
And I think the notable part is that there were two other special elections this year. And Republicans won both of those elections. And they were sworn in less than 24 hours after their election.
Yeah, that's insane. People need to see the writing on the wall on this one. House Majority Leader Speaker Mike Johnson is not allowing her swearing in because she would be the deciding vote to open the release of the Epstein files.
That's such a crazy coincidence. I can't imagine they're related, right? Mike Johnson has been on some tirade on his like media circuit and such, being like, well, she should get to work. Like, she should stop complaining about me and like get to work for her constituents and whatever. Which, okay, I guess.
Actually born in as a...
Yeah, I watched a video from her, showed up on my social media, and it's her giving a tour of her office because she finally has access to her office. But they can't use anything in the office because she doesn't have a government email because she's not sworn in. So she can't sign into the computers. She can't sign into the printer. She can't print anything. Like, she, the analogy she used was like, it's like being given a car and then finding out that it has no engine or tires. Like, great, you have a car, but you can't do anything with it. She has an office, but she can't do any work in it.
Yeah. I think Mr. Johnson's only digging himself further into this hole, because, like, how do you defend that? You can't.
Well, we'll find out, because...
People.
Queen is suing him. She and the Arizona Attorney General have filed a lawsuit against the House of Representatives. In hopes to get this taken care of sooner rather than later. But I do feel like we know that the Epstein files and Jeffrey Epstein, this is a worldwide thing. This was not just an American thing. One of the most notable people involved was Prince Andrew from the UK. I saw something over the weekend that Prince Andrew has completely and totally like disconnected himself from the crown. Like, he has given up all of his royal titles. Like, he was still holding on to some of it, but he is completely cut off from the British crown at this point. And I will admit, I did spend a winter break while I was in school in a very deep rabbit hole about the British monarchy and all of the strings they pulled.
I didn't know that. Thank you, Georgie.
And so I saw this and I was like, that feels interesting. Because why now? Why now are you choosing to completely renounce the crown if you're not worried that something's actually going to get released?
Exactly. Exactly, people. Pay attention, people. Shit's going down.
And Andy, the last thing I have to recap for you from the last couple of weeks is not very light. The Republican Party has had not one, but two Nazi-related scandals in the last week.
Insane. Tell me more.
And so if no one's been able to see these, it broke on Politico that a young Republican's chat was leaked. And so this is people aged, I think it's 18 to 35. It's essentially just like a group of young Republicans. It says it all in the name. And these were only from a few states. Montana was not mentioned, so grateful for that. But it's composed of millennials and Gen Z Republicans from across the country, many of them political staffers or elected officials themselves. Okay, this is our people. This is who's in the chat. And in this chat thread that was leaked, they made jokes about rape, mused about putting their political enemies in gas chambers or other kinds of violence. They use racist slurs, just some really horrible things in this chat. And I think maybe the one that just puts a little cherry on top for these guys is direct quote, "I love Hitler."
My God.
Like, one of these young Republicans said that in the chat.
Wow.
Which, obviously, this is horribly concerning rhetoric. No one should speak like that, let alone an upcoming generation of political leaders. And I think that is where my... Yeah, it was just that. But these are the people who want to fill the gaps. When the current Republicans age out, die, whatever it is, these are the people that the Republican Party is essentially training to fill their plates.
Yeah. And what's disappointing about this is, like, the vice president was out there saying shit like, you know, these poor young people's lives shouldn't be ruined by mistakes like this, like cancel culture, stuff like that. And it's like, dude, these young men are fucked up if they're going to be texting each other shit like, "I love Hitler." This isn't okay. These people should not be leaders in any party.
Yeah.
18 to 35, you're an adult at 18. That you're you can go to war at 18, you know?
Yeah, you can go to war at 18. You can, like, get married at 18.
Yeah. Like, it doesn't matter how young they are. They're adults in a group message with other Republican-affiliated folks. Not a good thing.
I'm just really confused, like, what they were doing on the internet when they were growing up, because I have been absolutely, like, permanently terrified of a digital footprint since I was, like, 12. And when I was, like, 14, I would be like, I don't like whoever, some person I was, like, fighting with in high school. And I would be like, no, I can't send that on Snapchat because the internet is forever. Like, did these guys not learn that?
You would have thought, because that would have been the age group. Our right. Age group, my God. Like,
yeah. So if these guys are kids who can say whatever they want, apparently me and you are too.
Yeah, I'm 33. I still fit the age range.
I'm 23, but I promise you that if we went on this podcast right now and said something bad about Charlie Kirk, that the vice president would feel very differently.
Right.
And that's the hypocrisy of it. But so those are our up-and-coming Republican leaders. But what if I told you there's a current Republican leader who's also involved in this?
Interesting. Who's that?
So this is separate from the group chat. This is just another Nazi scandal that the Republican Party has gotten themselves into in the last week. And his name is Paul Ingrassia, and he is Trump's nominee to lead the Office of Special Counsel. And the Office of Special Counsel is responsible for, namely, protecting whistleblowers and enforcing the Hatch Act, which is so painfully ironic because there's a hashtag violation on damn near every single government agency website right now. And what the Hatch Act is it basically says you cannot use federal money, you cannot use taxpayer money to advance political aims. And so on these websites, it is something along the lines of the Democrats shut down the government, so we can't help you, so you should blame them, in much more bureaucratic language, which is unprecedented. I got hit with a nasty sinus infection like 2 or 3 weeks ago. But so I went to the CDC website, like I'd looked something up trying to make myself feel better. And it took me to CDC. And on my phone, it's like the radical left has shut down the government. And I was like,
that's so crazy.
What? Yeah. So all that is super illegal. There's a whole act that a whole office takes care of. But that's who that this is the office that Trump thinks Paul Ingrassia should lead. A little bit about Paul Ingrassia. He said once, also leaked text, but different leaked texts. These guys really gotta figure out some kind of security or something. He said that Martin Luther King Jr. Day should be, quote, thrown into the seventh circle of hell. Which is lovely. He also said that about Juneteenth, Black History Month. I might be missing one. What?
He's a racist.
Yep, he's a racist for sure. But then he went and just told all of us that anyway. And because his direct quote here is, I do have a Nazi streak in me from time to time. I'll admit it.
That's insane.
What? This isn't like, oh, haha, sometimes I like to go put $100 in a slot machine on my way home from work without telling my wife. That is not what we're talking about here.
Yeah. Not a good thing for anybody.
And like, point blank, we have a president who is appointing these people into very high positions in the government.
Yeah. And Donald Trump has been a Nazi sympathizer for years. We know. Yeah. We know. Yeah. Remember the whole, like, good people on both sides thing when Charles? Mm-hmm.
But so Paul has since withdrawn his nomination. Thank God. Because he didn't have the Senate votes. And he said that. He's like, I don't have the votes, so I'm quitting, essentially. Which, one, I'll take, because I don't want that guy anywhere near my government. And two, I'm just really thankful that the Senate appears that they have a little bit of a backbone currently. Because we watch people like Susan Collins, Rand Paul, like, I don't know. I don't like him, but... When we did the initial cabinet, they felt that way about RFK Jr. They felt that way about Pete Hegseth.
Kristi Noem.
Yeah, no. So I'm glad they're at least attempting to turn down some of these absolutely insane people. I don't even know where they find these guys.
Yeah, for sure. Just a random thought, but during the first Trump administration, I feel like there was way more turnover within the administration itself. Like almost every day, somebody was resigning or leaving or getting fired or whatever. Now, like these psychopaths are like sticking around, actually doing the crazy shit they said they were going to do in Project 2025. So, yeah, it's like a totally different ballgame.
And I think that is the difference between his first term and his second term. Is in his first term, he was still trying to pretend he was normal.
Yeah.
Like he had moderate Republicans, normal Republicans, as I like to call them, advising him. And those are the people that he was firing, was the people who were telling him no, was the people who were like, Mr. President, I don't think that's a good idea. And he got sick and tired of being told no. And so when he got a do-over, He only hired people that he knew would tell him yes. And then that's why he gets literally everything he wants. Essentially.
Crazy.
But in better news, I have a very fun event, kind of, coming to you from Yellowstone County Democrats.
Ooh, exciting.
Yes. Amy, can you tell me a little bit about what our central committees do first?
Oh, yeah. So for our listeners, if you don't know what a Democratic Central Committee is, I'd love to tell you all about it. My position at the party is the Blue Bench Associate. So I spend my time working for the party, working with chairs and vice chairs and precinct people that are involved with central committees. What are central committees? Well, the majority of Montana counties have both Democrat and Republican central committees. Central committees are made up of volunteers that are duly elected to be on the central committee as either precinct people or board members of the central committee, or both. I am currently the chair of the Missoula County Democrat Central Committee. We have a full board of 10 and, like, gosh, something like 70 precincts, 80 precincts in all of
them. Nice.
And each precinct has a committee, a precinct man and a precinct woman, captain is what we call them. And yeah, those are like the voting body that make up the central committee. And the central committee in each county works to get Democrats elected in that county. So they are the boots on the ground, the people doing the grassroots work. So when we talk about like the Democratic Party, we're not just talking about us like 10 people working for the party as the structure. We're talking about, yes,
right,
us 10 people, but then also all of our, I think there's 35 Democratic Central Committees, ranging from like Shoto County to Powell to Yellowstone to Fort Peck Tribal Central Committee. They're all over the state, and there's young people, old people, all kinds of demographics of people, volunteers,
sure,
committees. And so they're the ones that are really doing the work in the state.
Seriously, we love central committees. If you're not involved in your central committee and you do want to get involved, please shoot us an email. We'd love to get you in touch. But our friends at Yellowstone County are having a raffle as a fundraiser leading into 2026.
Ooh.
And what their raffle is, and I have to make a disclaimer. You will never, ever, ever in my life hear me say go Cats. Ever. Ever.
Georgie.
You will not hear me say go Cats. I graduated from UM and it is go Grizz all day long. But I am putting that aside because I love Yellowstone County. They are auctioning off 2 tickets to the last home game in Bozeman, which is MSU versus UC Davis on November 15th. And based on where the standings are in the conference right now, that could be a major decider heading into postseason. So big game. Both tickets are in section 106, row 2. So you are going to be front and center, right in the action. The parking pass comes with it, so you don't have to worry about paying for or dealing with the hassle of finding somewhere to park on game day. And to save everyone that late night trip back or the early trip in the morning, is a hotel stay at the Element in downtown Bozeman for 2. So if you are an MSU fan and you want to support a Democratic cause, please consider our friends in Yellowstone County. You can purchase a raffle ticket for $25 or buy 3 for $60. And you can purchase those at yellowstonedemocrats.org/raffle. And the drawing for that will be November 12th at 7 p.m. I also should mention that the game is sold out. So if you're hoping to score tickets and support a good cause at the same time, may I direct you to yellowstonedemocrats.org.
Good plug, Georgie.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. And we also have, I think Andy and I may have talked about this a little bit on the pod before, but we now have full-time organizers in Missoula and Yellowstone counties. So we have an organizer on the ground in Billings. His name's Kieran. He's great. And his whole job is to build connections, make friends, have a democratic presence in Billings all year round. Because we know that it's not productive to show up on your door 2 weeks before election day and ask you 800 times how you're going to vote. We'd rather show up now and talk to you now, maybe in a couple of months, maybe have you over for a block party. And then when elections come around, everyone knows each other. Everyone, like, there is established relationships within the Billings community with Yellowstone County Democrats. And this is one of our major pushes moving forward, especially into 2026, is revamping our ground game and our organizing game. And I'm really, really excited to see how these two counties do moving forward. So that's what a donation to Yellowstone County helps support, is helps us keep Kieran there and keeps us knocking doors. But as always, we will see you again. Check out Yellowstone County for Raffle. Try not to read the news too much. And we'll see you next week.
Later.